You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God is doing there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and I am excited this week to continue the second part of a conversation that we are having with Pastor Jim and Tina Von Wald. Their story so far has been awesome as they've explored some of the harder times they've had in ministry and how they've co-pastored. And now we get the wonderful opportunity to dive into the work that they have each done on their thesis, how God has used that process to shape their leadership and their journey with Christ. And so without further ado, I want you to dive into part two of this conversation. Enjoy.
Cool. Well, let's switch gears again. You know, let's talk about some of your education right now. Both of you have a master's degree through Trinity Bible College and graduate school. And I know that you both studied kind of in the rural track. And so give us, I'm going to call this just the 3-minute flyover. Okay. So obviously you're about to reduce a work that took you a long time where you read a ton of books to like 3 minutes of like, hey, here's a big picture on this topic. And then I'm kind of excited to maybe just hear, and I know for Jim's side of it, the next question really is about, succession, which is really about your master's. But before we get to that question, Tina, why don't you take some time and tell us some of the big takeaways from your research, you know, just stuff that you think would be very practical for you studying. And so tell us what you studied, give us the flyover. And then Tina, why don't you start with some practical, you know, hey, what can people take away from this?
Okay, well, we got our master's in rural ministry from Trinity, and we just both really felt very strongly that we should do it in rural ministry. Weren't sure why, but we both wanted to do it. And so we moved in that direction. Now, going through the program was amazing, but we had also felt like as we were going through, we've done a lot of this already. So even more, I feel like that emphasis, it was so clear that God's going to use what we've done for great things as we move into the future. My thesis was actually on leadership development in the rural church, the local rural church, and the lack thereof actually is what it was. I'm passionate about leadership and the importance of leadership in healthy organizations, and my research was on, it was in Minnesota. Well, no, it wasn't just in Minnesota. It was across Minnesota, but it was, you know, our rural pastors getting the leadership development that they need. And my answer was no. I didn't find that there was many outside of what they had had in college, which for many of them was more than 20 years ago.
Right.
There was just not a lot. Even the districts provided stuff that they do, the conferences and stuff,
sure,
just wasn't, they either weren't attending or it wasn't, didn't apply. Oftentimes we find that the district stuff doesn't necessarily apply to the rural.
And a lot of our heart with this podcast, right, is to create resources that apply, you know? So anyways, continue on.
Yep. So it was really just, I probably, you know, we've knocked around doing the doctorate, but I just can't imagine writing it anymore.
Yeah,
but
that's fair.
To bring some, you know, ideas and tools to how we can, and that's some of what we're trying to launch as soon as we, you know, finish what we're doing now, is to really provide leadership development tools for pastors so that they can have healthy churches. They don't have to be big churches. Big church doesn't mean it's healthy. They just need to be healthy in their own selves and in their leadership. And yeah, so that's so important to me. I'm just passionate about it.
And Tina didn't share this, but a part of her rural leadership is she's an adjunct at through Global University developing their 2-year rural, really rural ministry degree. And that's kind of the underpinnings for rural pastors who might need a little bit more biblical training on the educational side.
Yeah, first of all, way to bury the lead, Tina. You know, you're like, well, I wrote this piece of paper and now I'm an adjunct professor teaching people rural ministry. Come on. Come on, don't sell yourself short, you know. So no, that's huge. And one thing we'll do, and Jim, we'll get into yours in a second, but one thing we'll definitely do is I would love for you guys to you know, maybe allow us to put an email address in the comments where if people wanted to access your theses, I would really love them to be able to check that out because it sounds like what you've done is really good work. So I know for me personally, once we get off this podcast, I'm going to be requesting your thesis, you know? So anyways, Jim, over to you, man. Let's give us that flyover and then we'll walk into the next question. So,
you know, Tina, and I think I probably will flow into the next question for the most part.
Perfect.
Our grad degrees are the same. We went through at the same time. Tina really motivated me to complete mine in a timely
2020
fashion.
2020 was in that slot.
My wife was very kind. She was like, you're smarter than this. You could work harder. And I was like, well, cool, I guess. You know, that's fine. I guess I'll work harder, you know. Thank goodness for a supportive spouse. So.
So my thesis was on succession and or transition in the rural church. It was, I used a lot of the data from Minnesota in developing it, but it ended up being a lot larger than just Minnesota. I extended it out through not just the Assemblies of God, but into other network churches and denominations also in my interviews and in my study. And what I learned was that And I'll just speak to the rural church. The rural church does not do succession and or transition well.
Right.
And some of it was very personal in reflecting back on my own upbringing in a rural church, whenever there was succession or transition that would happen. And I would call, you know, I'm using those terms there interchangeably. They're very different, but I'll use them interchangeably. So not to dive deep into the terminology. Whenever a change happened in the church, it was always very traumatic. It was always very sorrowful. There was lots of unresolved grief that would happen. And I just don't believe that that needs to be the case. And I didn't. And so as I pressed through into writing the thesis about that, a part of it was also our own ideas and thoughts about what was going to happen in our own lives. And so that was projecting quite a few years into the future. What would happen in our church? You know, this is a church that God has helped us build from nothing to, you know, a large rural church. And what would happen to the people? They've never been through any change.
Yeah. Like this.
And we're called to be the shepherds of them and of their hearts, of their spiritual lives. And as I processed that, that motivated me to press into that to be my thesis work. And certainly your question of, you know, our emails and we love to share the works that we've done and the resources that we have. I've shared it across many bandwidths for pastors who have heard about it and sent it to them. But it's interesting that the rural church is not the only church that doesn't do succession or transition well. The metropolitan, the urban churches don't do that well either. One of the resources I used was Transition and Succession in the Megachurch by Nate Roush. He wrote his doctoral dissertation on that. And in that, his research showed that only 12% of megachurches, those over 1,500, have any kind of plan written down, which is... To me is
shocking. Yeah.
It's shocking, but it also is, I think there's accountability that's going to happen someday in all of our lives. And I'm going to be accountable as a shepherd. How well did I shepherd the hearts of the people that I shepherded? And my personal opinion in both in study and in life is that the shepherd is the one that can shepherd the church through transition. Why not have the shepherd the people? And that just, for the most part, doesn't happen. And so I kind of focused on, in my thesis, I believe there's five different models of transition or succession. And our model that we're leveraging is the model of co-pastor. And our bylaws are specifically written that once a co-pastor is elected, and this is with the exception of Tina and myself,
Sure.
when the next co-pastor is elected, it kicks a time frame of mentoring into place for that co-pastor to eventually be the lead pastor of the church. And so that it actually is time defined. Ours is 27 to 42 months, and I think it could be different wherever it's at. But what the strength of it, and I'll just share some of the strengths that we've already stepped into, is typically somebody coming into the role in a church our size would not likely be somebody who doesn't have experience in leading churches. But they're not going to have the DNA of our church either. And so for someone to have the DNA of the church, that means that they're there and they're on site and they're in process and that's becoming intrinsic to who they are. So rather than going through a pastoral lead change and the vision of the church has to start all over, has to go in another direction, and it may be completely opposite of where it was at, that synergy that's already present can continue to go forward. And so there's a number of books that are written on it, but Dr. Roberts' book on passing the baton, he wrote a book on literally the transition zone is the place that the race is won or lost. You know, if the baton is dropped, if the transition isn't smooth, if there isn't a good process in place, that team is not going to win. And using the vernacular of winning and losing, when the church loses, there's a lot of people that lose. And so I just believe the church can win. The church can win in transition and succession. And so that's, you
So
know,
I'm going to
that.
pick your brain. I'm going to pick both your brains, and this is kind of going off script a little bit, but it's just dealing with your thesis. Tina, if I were to ask you, let's take a church of 50 to 100, right? Your classic small town church might have one pastor, probably doesn't have the money to do a co-pastor, but what's the best resource available to that pastor to be developed in leadership, Tina? And then over to you, same church, Jim. How does that pastor plan for succession most effectively with limited resources, no staff? And probably a congregation that, could not afford to have two people there at once in that way. So Tina, over to you first. What's the greatest resource you think available to help develop that
Well,
pastor?
I mean, obviously, I think one of the very best could be finding a mentor. Now, obviously, we're spread out usually rurally, so that makes it a little bit more of a challenge. But with technology now today, I think mentoring, and there are so many quality books that you could read for your own development. And I mean, I have lists. I mean, my whole bibliography is filled with books that can be beneficial for that. But I really do think that a mentoring or a coaching, this isn't just to promo coaching,
Oh
but I
no,
do
I'm excited. We're going to get there in a second, so it's going to be
I
fun.
really do believe that that is one of the best tools, that somebody can use if they don't have a staff, they don't have other. I get, oftentimes that's what rural is. They're single staff structures. We also do in Minnesota, we have what's called a cadre. And we've had the opportunity to go around and do trainings for the cadre. So it's kind of that thing, just finding somebody who has the resources and the tools and that you can
Oh, sure.
can.
Cool. And then over to you for succession. Again, how does someone successfully transition a church when yes, single staff, not a lot of extra money thrown around. That's a lot of people's situation.
I'm going to unabashedly first speak about the cadres. Tina and I are going to be presenting to the Midwest Region superintendents in May about cadres and cadre and how that might work in different networks around us. But we barnstormed the state to five different locations. So again, we go to the pastors and bring resource material. We've been doing that for about 3 years now, and so it helps to undergird them. But the succession, let me share one example of how this could work. And actually, it was in a church of about 70 people. The pastor called, and we talked through about what succession might look like in his church, because again, staffing and finances are complicated in a smaller setting. What he did was is he set a plan to find somebody who could be co-vocational in his church that he would approach to be the next leader of the church, and told them, this is why I'm approaching you. So, and actually that there was, he found a guy who moved to his community, a very small community of just a few hundred people, moved to his community, was able to be co-vocational during that time. And he mentored him into that role. And so he was on staff with him in a volunteer role during that time because he had other income to do that with. And he did something that I believe is necessary today in the world church, and that is raising up leaders from within the church.
That's huge.
Our staff has all been raised up within the church, other than our youth pastor who came fresh out of college. So he has been raised. He's no other ministry experience, been with us for a dozen years. And so, but we raised up all of our staff members from within the church. They often all of them started co-vocationally. They were just, just so pay was something that you have to navigate. But anyway, back to this pastor, he brought this man in and mentored him for 2 years. And at the end of 2 years, this was the interesting thing that happened. He resigned from his position as the lead pastor. The church hired him as a 3-month interim to shepherd them through the actual transition process of electing this man to be the
Wow.
next pastor. Just a out of the box kind of process. And now that, that time frame has been about 3 years ago, that pastor is successfully leading that church.
Wow.
The pastor that retired is now in our network as one of the intentional interim pastors. And that's another model, is the intentional interim. These are retired pastors who go into a church that doesn't have a pastor, because not everybody can go through this
Right.
process.
And again,
Sometimes.
it's hard because you might be able to seek it out, you might be able to find someone, but if you don't, yeah, how do you bring someone in to
There is
bridge
a
that gap?
yes. There is another model that fits, and the intentional interim model fits, where a pastor with experience goes in and they are with that church and shepherd them through the period of time it takes to find another pastor. And sometimes that's, I mean, that's been a year and a half. They're there and they're committed to do that. And so that is, again, our denomination has an unbelievable amount. The last I heard was about 2,800 pastors who would retire if they could, but they can't find a replacement. Well, those 2,800 pastors could be intentional interims and move into a church and help the church go through the process. And I don't know, like this pastor did, where he did it in his own church. I think that might be very complicated to do that
Right. I could
because.
see. I was shocked a little. I was like, ooh, that has a lot of hidden mines, you know what I'm saying? So.
But to do that in a church where you're shepherding with the experience you have, because oftentimes churches, pastors don't always leave churches because they're retiring or they're receiving another call. Sometimes it's due to spiritual health or other issues like that, where there needs to be somebody to come in and help, even in a healing process. Or a great book that I'm reading right now is Relead by Dr. John Chasteen. It's about, the title is How to Fix What You Didn't Break. And I just, I mean, that's something that an interim pastor come in and can help to shepherd. And I give him a plug. Just I don't, I just, he is just somebody who, in reading that book, and I'm sorry for doing this on your podcast, but it just is a book that
You're
I
good.
just think would be a great resource for rural pastors.
Well, and we definitely throw any books people reference, we usually throw in the show notes. Well, hey, that's all been really great stuff. I think we have time for one more question today. And so I'm going to focus on kind of coaching. And so you both are choosing in this season of life and have chosen, but really looking ahead to your future, you've chosen to become coaches. And so why did you choose that? And then why should pastors pursue coaching? Because
I'm going
some
to
people
answer
get
first.
weirded out by it, you know what I'm
Yeah.
saying? Like
Oh,
some
yeah.
people are like, I don't like that. We're talking about our feelings and all that nonsense. It's just, people have misconceptions about it. So, both of you take a turn, and over the next 5, 6 minutes, we'll just hash that out.
Coaching, I think, has been something, just my perspective, that's been underutilized and neglected in the church world, unfortunately, because it's a powerful tool. One of the reasons that I have chosen to go and be certified as a coach is I believe one of the things that I can be and I can do is I can be a platform for Tina to stand on in her coaching. She's a phenomenal coach. Far, I mean, I listen to her coach and I'm just like, I wish I could do that. And I don't. That's, you know, my bent and my mentality sometimes distracts from coaching. But I believe that one of the things God has called me to do in this season is also to platform a lot of her gifts in this area. And so I lob that over to her right now, and she can talk about coaching.
Well, you kind of said a lot of people get weirded out about coaching, and I don't disagree. I feel like it's a really untapped resource, especially in the rural communities, because they've either never heard of it or they're unsure of it. I think it's important to distinguish between coaching and counseling. We as pastors oftentimes are asked to counsel, be counselors, and, you know, we're not certified counselors, but we're kind of, that role is what we're, you know, kind of thrown into. And I think to distinguish the difference between counseling and coaching, coaching is if you take a tree, if you look at a tree above ground and below ground stuff is all the past, all the icky stuff, all the unhealthy stuff. That's really where counseling lies. Coaching is above ground, assuming that you're healthy for the most part, and you're just kind of stuck. You're stuck with an event you're trying to do, or you're stuck with a certain how to deal with people in a certain way. Whatever the problem might be, there's the assumption that you're healthy, but you just need to get unstuck. And the coach's job is to help you by asking you questions and leading you to your own conclusion. And that's what I love about coaching. I don't have to know everything. I don't have to be an expert in everything. I just have to be really good at helping you discover what you need to discover as a solution to your situation or your problem as it be. So I'm excited because I just think it's a whole different concept of how we help people, you know, get through and get to the other side. I'm a teacher at heart. And so you're helping people learn to solve problems on their own, which I just think is brilliant. And I love it about coaching.
Man, absolutely. Well, guys, this has been an awesome conversation. There's so much to unpack here. I'll definitely be hitting you up, and we'll include, you know, an email to get your theses, and we'll reference some of these books. But I do just want to say thank you. Thank you for a good conversation today.
Thanks, Joe, so much for having us on. And we look forward to all that God is going to do in the rural community. Thanks for championing the rural community and the rural church. Just appreciate all you're doing, Joe. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Well, from all of us at Rural Advancement, we just want to say again, it is our goal, our hope, and our passion that we have resources that don't just speak to what you're doing, but speak from people who understand the immense value of the rural church. As always, you can find us on Spotify or Apple Podcast or ruraladvancement.com. But really, the best way, the most rural fashion, is just to find a pastor or leader who needs to be a part of these conversations, who could benefit from the tools offered within, and just share it with them by word of mouth. And so for this week, I have been your host, Joe Epley. They have been Pastors Jim and Tina Von Wald, and we will see you next week.